In this episode of Life Repurposed, I'm joined by my friends Amber and Amy to talk about empty nesting. Neither of them has an empty nest, and so we're approaching it from the viewpoint of thinking ahead. So as we chat, we get the perspective of Amber, who has her kids still in the nest, and her first one is about to start high school later this year. Amy has one who has gone off to college and others who are approaching that. And then I have been an empty nester for about 10 years. This is a candid discussion. Some tears were shed. We talked about all things related to empty nesting. So come on inside. Welcome to Life Repurposed. This is where midlife meets inspiration, practical guidance, and renewed purpose amid life's evolving chapters. We navigate faith questions and messy, uncertain twists with humor and a commitment to pursue treasure, even in the hard stuff. I'm your host, Michelle Rayburn, the author of books and Bible studies about finding hope in the trashy stuff of life. Hello there. I am wrapping up the midlife mixtape mini series that I've been doing with a discussion about empty nesting. And so we're going to be calling this mixtape track The Final Countdown to Empty Nesting. So I am joined by my friends today because I really wanted to have multiple perspectives. And I know that much of the time in midlife, we're actually talking about approaching some of these things and we're not just there. So if you're in that 40-year-old age, you may be like I was, a young 40-something-year-old who had my kids off at college because I had them young. Or you might be somebody who has very small children still at home because you had them recently. So it's really a mixed bag. And so as we're talking about this, I wanted to bring in multiple perspectives because we're at so many different places. It's age is just a number. And with more people having children later, we are going to see more people approaching midlife with many small children still at home. So this is a diverse conversation and we're just exploring the idea. And both of my friends are podcasters. And so you'll find them, I will link in the show notes, but you will find Amber Cullum on the Grace Enough podcast, and she interviews fabulous guests there. You will find Amy Fritz on the Untangled Faith podcast. She has paused on the podcast now, but there's many episodes that you can go to and listen to there. And she's also a writer. So I am going to say no more and jump right into this conversation. Outside of being podcasters, we are also virtual friends. The three of us have never been in a room together, right?
No.
Nope.
No, but we've talked often about how we just want to sit down and have some casual conversations about things. And this is wrapping up the midlife mixtape series that I've been doing. And as we approach midlife, some people become empty nesters. Some people had their children later and they're a long way from being an empty nester. But I wanted to talk about the phases of that journey. So thank you, Amber and Amy, for being here today.
This is fun.
I know. I'm glad to be here. We should just chat, though, about all the other different things at some point, because we've been chatting for like 20 minutes.
I know. I don't think that I think some of those things just have to stay under wraps forever.
You gotta pay extra
for that.
There's
some things that are not. Yeah, those are not for public consumption. But what I want to know is when you start thinking ahead to emptiness. Now, actually, before we do that, tell my listeners who are here with us where you are in this process. So, Amber, where are you in the process?
So I am 44 years old, but I have younger kids, really, I think for a 44-year-old. I have a 13-year-old. No, he's 14. Last week, he turned 14. He's an eighth grader. And then I have a sixth grade girl who is 11 and a third grade boy who is 8. No, he's second grade.
Okay, so you're...
I don't know.
Math.
It's okay. We don't have to remember. So you're a ways from being an empty nester. But as we start thinking about moving that first one into high school, it starts entering the back of our mind. Maybe it entered the back of your mind from the moment he was born. So Amy, where are you in the process?
Hi, I'm Amy. We have three kids. I am 47. I'm going to be 48 this summer. And our oldest is in his first year of college. So he is going to be turning 19 in just a couple of weeks. And then our daughter is a junior in high school And our youngest is a freshman in high school. And let me just tell you, once they hit high school, it's like time speeds up so fast. So that's where we're at, where I've got my feet in a couple places, like kids at home and a kid at college, and thinking, oh my goodness, this is happening.
So I'm 54, and when I was 42, my first left home, and when I was 44, my second left home. And then it was a couple years from that time of him being away at college before he got married. So my kids were in and out when they were student teaching, living with us during the summers and stuff like that. But 2017 was when I officially became an empty nester because they were both in their careers and moved out. So let's talk about when you're thinking about the idea of becoming an empty nester. There's a spectrum of how we might feel. And on one day we might feel a certain way, and another day we might feel a different way. So where are you in your thoughts about that day, like where I was at in 2017, where I'm like, I'm officially an empty nester?
Oh
Do
man.
you want me to start?
It's okay if you cry.
Go ahead, Amber.
Because, well, for me, I am a person who does not like change. Like I mean, I don't know that anybody loves change, but I really, really struggle with it. When we moved from Kentucky to Florida, you would have thought that we were moving to the most remote desert out in the middle of nowhere, and there was never going to be a time I was going to see my family again. I mean, I was just devastated. And then I really take a while to adjust to that. So a lot of my feelings about potentially being an empty nester already, like as soon as I think about Bennett leaving to go to college, like I can just go into immediate tears and I have to just think of something different. I can hardly even imagine my world without my kids at home. And then with him, particularly because he's the oldest, I often joke that me and my other two children are codependent on Bennett and that we're going to need to go to a 12-step program when he leaves the house.
That oldest child thing.
So anyways, that's kind of where I'm at.
I was thinking about the whole preparing yourself mentally and emotionally, and I feel like I was sort of in denial, and I've kind of been in denial for a long time that this is actually happening. Because life, the only thing, it's not like the only thing I'm doing is being a mom to like my oldest kid that was a senior last year, and then it sort of surprised me. I was like, oh, we got to do all the senior things. And this is actually going somewhere. This is going to a place of him moving out of the house, at least for the school year. And so I think I started in denial, and then I had to like wrap my brain around it. But let me tell you, when we dropped off Ethan at college, we were a disaster emotionally. The whole family went because he's the oldest. So I don't know if that will happen again with the others because Ethan will already be in college. He won't be dropping off his younger siblings. But like we like hugged him and we got in the van, and like my husband was like, I don't even know if I can drive. We were, and I was surprised. I mean, I knew I would be a little emotional. I did not know how much all of us would be like, and it wasn't just like the parent thing. It was like the younger kids being like, oh, things are different. It's different. And not knowing how different it would be. So I think dropping the others off will be, and that's not even like when you drop your kid off at college, doesn't mean they're never coming back. So it's not like you are in the empty nest now, but it will be different because we've experienced it and we know that feeling of, oh, we're actually going to talk again. This isn't the end, but when you do that drop off, it's just something you cannot prepare yourself for as much as you think you can. You just can't.
And actually, your life does change as each one leaves the nest because your family dynamic changes. You start to do things without that child. You go to things. You might go on vacation without that child, which that felt really weird for me the first time we did something without the four of us because my kids didn't even date in high school. So it was the four of us, you know, it was like we were this unit. And my sons are 2 years apart and they were buddies all through growing up. So yeah, it was a weird thing to like have one child at the table.
I feel like I wasn't paying enough attention to prepare myself, But now, with one kid in the first year of college, what I'm doing is I'm paying attention and I'm asking questions to people all ahead of me. How did you do this? How did you survive? Tell me, how do we do this? Yeah.
Is this something that you've talked about with your spouse? Is it a conversation you have ever?
Yes, Sam and I will talk about it on occasion, but I am definitely in all areas of life one that will talk things ad nauseam long before they ever happen. And he will not. And that is both good and bad, right? So we, but it's normally in a joking type manner, if you know what I mean when I say that, where it's, we're going to have to send Amber off to the to the psych ward. I should not be joking around like that. But sometimes I do feel like, wow, I really want to learn to even enjoy my spouse because the time is coming when it really will just be he, you know, him and myself. And I do enjoy him, but so much of your life is just poured into your kids. And particularly in that high school phase where you might not be having really like intimate, deep conversations with them, but your life is busy when it comes to both parents, if they're in the house, are taking all of their kids different places. So I feel like in some ways I connect even less with my husband now than what I did when they were younger because we have to divide and conquer. So we should probably talk about it more, but there's a lot going on. We got to talk about what's going on today.
It's interesting. I don't know that I've talked a lot about it with my husband until like I was falling apart emotionally after we chopped up even. But I think there's two things going on. One is, as Christian women, there's always been, especially for our generation, maybe a little bit ahead of us too, is the idea of that basically our job, the most important thing you could do and your highest calling, which I would argue is not your highest calling, was like about being a parent. When it's kind of crazy to say that, when not everybody gets to be a parent, how do they not get a higher calling? So I would push back against that. But like, we really, as Christian women, wrap our world and our identity around being a mom so much. It makes me think of, I mentioned this in passing, the book, that not the book, the movie Runaway Bride, where Maggie Carpenter, she says Ike keeps asking how she likes her eggs, or like, and asks the people she dated, and they all said a different thing, like, oh, she likes them hard boiled like I do, she likes it scrambled like I do. And so like, she doesn't even know what she likes, because so much of what she did was about who she was with. And I think that happens with us as moms, is that we kind of get into investing so much in our kids, which is a really important thing, but we can forget about what we like and who we are until we have a little margin to be like, oh, here I am. It's me and myself. And the other thing I think is interesting is some personalities are more future focused, where they are really into thinking, and some are more like really in the present or in the past. So it's not a natural conversation to talk about what's coming next. And for some reason, it just wasn't a huge natural thing for us to think, sit around and talk about the future. It just wasn't a thing.
I tend to be more in the moment, but I also, in that moment, know that every moment leads to something else. So there have been times where, when I was raising our boys, when we were raising our boys, that I would look at that and think, okay, this has, I have to use this as a preparation moment for when he becomes an adult. Because I couldn't ignore that. I knew that I didn't want to create this 18-year-old baby who left home, who couldn't do anything without his mom. So I was thinking about that. But in the, I was, I'm definitely more of an in the moment, not planning very far ahead and setting a ton of goals. But we found that my husband actually had a harder time with our kids leaving home than I did.
Wow, that's
How
interesting.
so?
He, like, our kids were his, and we have two boys. We have no daughters. So I think that makes a difference. they were his social buddies. Yeah. Like, they watched the movies together when they would hang out. I'd go do something by myself. They go on adventure trips to the Minnesota Boundary Waters yeah. together. Yeah. One of them fixes cars with him and was always out in the garage with him. He now lives a mile up the road, and they still sneak over to each other's houses. So that's another
having
thing.
Having sons is, but, yeah.
But he was really, really, I could tell, he didn't voice it well, but I could tell he was feeling a lot of depression about that change in the relationship. And I tend to be a little bit more, I don't know, maybe not as sentimental. So I think there's an assumption that it's always the mom who struggles with yeah. that. And in our case, I struggled less.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Do you think the Gen X generation was like one of the first to like have this thing where we've our kids, by the time they graduate from high school, they've had like a million graduations starting with when they're in kindergarten and preschool. They're in like their cap and gown. And I remember yeah. watching kindergartners at our homeschool co-op do their little thing at the end, their little graduation, and they're standing up there with their little signs about what they're going to be when they grow up. I was crying and weeping like over these kids that were not my own. My oldest was probably in third or fourth grade at the time. And my husband leans over and is like, none of those kids are going to be any of those things when they grow up. She's not going to be a princess. He's not going to be a fireman. He's not going to be an astronaut. And he was not, I mean, I was like an early griever. I am an, like, I have been crying about this from time to time when you have like these moments. And so my husband was not that, but there was a little bit of that as the time got closer. He was like, oh, this is my son that I've actually groomed to do all these, like, to like what I like and to play games with me. And like, now he's leaving.
Yeah.
Now what am I going to do?
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think though in kindergarten with graduation, I was very, I mean, I definitely had a lot of emotion because it does, you can see the growing up start to happen. And then they also play lots of sappy music, Amy. So,
like, we didn't have any of that. We didn't have kindergarten graduation or eighth grade graduation.
We don't have eighth grade. Or so,
any of that. No. Some schools have a whole eighth grade thing. Yeah. I did go the year before to the high school graduation because I don't always go if I don't know somebody, you know, that well in the school. And I went the year before because I wanted to know, like, how will I feel about the process? Yeah. I actually got emotional watching other parents get those flowers from their kids and the, like, okay, I needed that to watch them do it so I could kind of like put a little barrier around my heart the next year. So I wasn't like
yeah.
on the floor sobbing in that moment.
Yeah.
So have you thought about how you envision, you know, is there anything in your life now that you think will change when your kids are no longer at home? I'll give you an example. I left a career as a registered nurse, stayed home with the kids, taught piano lessons, did some writing and speaking on the side, but really didn't have a full-time job outside of our home until after they were in college. Have you thought about anything that you wouldn't do now because of time and commitments and things like that?
Amy, it's all you.
It's all me. I think it's an interesting question to ask in this particular format for us because we are all podcasters. And so we have invested in some of our skills outside of parenting. And so I think we've already thought a little bit about who we are apart from our role as moms. And so it's not going to be as big of a, like, all of a sudden, oh, wait, all I've done is parent. And now what is it? So I feel like we have a little more of a transition and a little more of an on-ramp to the empty nest because I've been thinking, I feel like this is sort of my, you know, it's like the stereotypical midlife crisis of like, oh, who am I? What am I supposed to do? What am I good at? And I don't know anymore. Like I have spent a lot of time parenting, raising kids. And now I'm like, oh, I want to do something. I want to bring in a little money. I have kids that I have to help pay for college for. And now I'm like, who am I now? And what am I good enough at? Am I good enough at anything? at all when I've spent so much time not really officially being in the full-time workforce. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. So I've started to think about what that means for me as how I spend my time. But I think what's interesting, I think, is that it isn't changing all at once for me. Because kids are not as they don't need me as much. They don't need me to sit around and anticipate their every need and take care of them. Like they're very self-sufficient. Like my youngest is in ninth grade. So if I was only sitting around and thinking about them and what I need to do for them, I would not be very happy anyways as an individual. And maybe it's just the world we're in right now that the way life is set up that they don't need me. I don't know. Like I've got other things already. So I feel like I have thought a little bit about what's next, but I feel like it won't be dramatic in like how I spend my time. Does that make any sense at all?
It does make sense. I actually was surprised by where my path went. So you could have the answers right now, but like I said, I don't plan that far ahead. So when a career dropped in my lap and I had to create a resume, I went, my last resume was 20 years old. I mean, like, sure.
I do have to tell you, I had my first job interview in 2 decades yesterday. And I was in a little bit of a crisis mode of like, what is happening? How do I do this?
It feels weird because I didn't plan for it. It just came along and I went, well, I guess I can do this right now. I have the space.
I mean, I think for me, I know a lot will change because, like Amy, my kids are at home and so they do a hybrid model schooling. So I help them on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, my older two are independent. I do very, very little with them. My youngest one, though, still very much is dependent up on me. And so, you know, one change for me this year has been just taking on a part-time job at our church, helping in the interim. And I've realized like I really, really love that, not just the role itself, but I've always known I'm a social person, but getting to be back in an environment where I get to engage with people and, you know, direct people, plan, coordinate things. I realize like that's a skill I actually really enjoy. And so the change has been like, I really still can't take that on full time. And that's a bit of a disappointment for me because honestly, I want to. And it's not because I don't want anyone listening who works full time with kids to think that you made the wrong choice. It's just for our family, we have decided this school path, and it's still, as we look at it from year to year, seems to be the best path for our family, which means I say no to opportunities that I kind of want to say yes to. And so there's that mix, but I definitely already know when my kids are gone, I will face extreme loneliness. And so I will have to do something, even if it's like not paid work, but it's intentional, high-level volunteer work, whatever it is. Those are the kinds of changes that I anticipate because I know if I don't step into something, I can also just sit at home and start feeling really sorry for myself. But I cannot be isolated at home because I need and crave the social interaction and honestly, the brain challenges that come along with not just having to make high-level decisions, but also having to navigate conflict with other humans. And I know that sounds crazy, but I mean, I do.
I think there's some good structure that comes that's built in with having other people in your home that aren't fully baked adults doing their own thing that requires you to get up in the morning. It requires you to you have like these little benchmarks throughout the day, like they're leaving for something or I'm bringing them somewhere or you know it's that built-in interaction that we'll have to be much more intentional about having that happen without the people living in the house with us.
For sure.
My boys went to public school, so I'm wondering if that makes any difference. I mean, they were gone like 9 hours a day, a lot of days. The bus came early in the morning, and then they came home after. Sometimes it was me going picking them up from practice or something. But we spent a lot of time in the car then because it was running to church after that, or picking up pizza between practice and youth group or something like that. So I'm just wondering if from your perception of knowing other people who homeschool, have you noticed that there's a different transition with children leaving home, or have you not noticed much of a difference?
I think it's, I mean, it is the whole range of things. And depending on how healthy, like, a parent is as an individual, how much you're able to even differentiate yourself from your kids. People can do that in a really healthy way as homeschoolers or hybrid, or as public school parents. And I think the more healthy you are, the less jarring it is. But as far as interrupting your schedule, I think it's a lot more like physically and literally different. If you're used to having your child home every day. But even like when I think about homeschooling, the stereotypical idea of what homeschooling looks like from the 70s and 80s is very different in 2024, is that most of us do this in a way that is it's a hybrid model of a bunch of different things. It does not really involve our kids being at home every day. That's the secret about homeschooling.
Well, especially when they're like juniors and seniors, a lot of them are actually dual enrolled. And so they're getting their associate's degree. Like, they're literally in college doing high school. So you're really doing nothing with them. It's not what
making sure they have a vehicle to get or a ride where they need to go and money to pay for things.
Same as you, Michelle.
One of the things I've thought of is because of how I was raised, it has made me make different decisions as a parent. And then I think also observing other parents. So I'd love to have you be thinking here of, like, if there's something — we're not going to name names, but if there's something you've seen someone else do that you're like, I wouldn't do that. My parents wanted to be really involved in my life with a lot of rules, basically. It was kind of, you know, so I was home a lot more than the average teenager who went to public school. And so I couldn't wait to go to college. And so when I left, I wanted that independence of, I didn't want my mom calling me every day. I didn't want her to ask questions about where I went or who I was with. So I think that influenced how I parented as well. I also observed some parents who texted their kids after they moved out, like, every day, or had a couple phone calls a day. And I also knew that wasn't going to fit with my boys just wouldn't want me to do that. So have you thought about any of that kind of thing? Like, as you think about it now, because we set up those habits now of how much contact we have and those kinds of things. What have you thought about?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a home that I didn't really want to be there. And so I spent a lot of time my teen years trying to figure out ways that I could not be home, which meant spending a lot of time with my friends, and not a lot of time in the sense of normal teenage involvement. But like, if I could spend the whole weekend away, I would spend the whole weekend away. And also, part of my personality is that I like to be with people most of the time when I was younger. And so that has definitely impacted my parenting, in the sense of, I often ask, what were the reasons that I did not want to be at home? And how do I create an environment where my kids do like to be at home, or where they do want to have friends over? And even though it's really hard for me at times to have a whole group of kids over that are rowdy and eating all my food and just rude a lot of times, I keep trying to say to myself, this is the better option. This is the better option. Like, you know, it's better to be welcoming and, you know, people that your kids love being in your house than in someone else's house. Not because someone else's house is bad, but I know what's going on in my house. And so with that said, I'm also the type of person, like, when I go away to a conference, I won't speak to anybody in my family the whole 4 days that I'm gone. I don't call my husband. I don't call my children. My children don't call me. And they're young. And so some people are like, what? I'm like, yep, that's why Sam and I could have never dated long distance, because literally when he goes on a trip, like, we text and say, is everything good? Yep, everything's good. All right, see you later. So it'll be interesting to see what it's like when my kids leave home. Yeah. I'm going to probably honestly have to work really hard to stay connected, because we're not the type of people who FaceTime our grandparents mm-hmm. who are out, and we don't live near mm-hmm. any family. We just aren't. So it'll be interesting to see if we stay connected once our kids are outside of the house. I can't imagine I'll turn into a major helicopter parent then, because I'm not one now. So I don't know.
Yeah. Staying in touch and the kind of relationship we have with kids as they get older, I feel like it's technology has changed the way that we can do that. Mm-hmm. Smartphones, being able to like talk to anybody at any time, and it's not, doesn't cost you, there's no such thing as a long distance phone call anymore. I've been kind of watching how other people do things, and I think, you know, what I want to do is let my kids differentiate, be who they need to be, steel myself for that awkwardness of how that natural thing of them wanting to figure out how they, who they are and what they're going to be and what they believe, and understand I have no control over that. But also mm-hmm. like leave a door open that says, hey, I want to still have a relationship with you. I don't know how you want that to look too, but I kind of want to follow their lead. Not let them think, I don't want to have everyone, like, see you later. You know, you've graduated from college now. Mm-hmm. You've got a job in an apartment. Like, good mm-hmm. luck. Like, let me know if you need anything, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to leave them thinking, oh, I guess mom is done with me. Mm-hmm. So I think I want to have some, like, intentional conversations that say, hey, I don't want to be the parent that's like annoying all the time. I want to be connected. What does that look like for you? And how can we do this in a way that honors your individuality and you being an adult and still, mm-hmm. you know, says that we're a family? You know, at this point we have a family chat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes Ethan, who's at college, you know, early on, he was really active and still like talking to us. But as the time goes by, he's like more busy. And so sometimes I'll put in there, hey, Ethan, we're moving. We're selling the house. I want to know if he's paying attention. And they're like, wait, what? Why? We are? I'm like, no, we're not, actually. I just wanted to know if you would answer. Generally, I think no news is probably good news. And I don't want to know every last thing my kids are thinking and doing. Mm-hmm. I don't really. Parents sometimes think that they want that. I want to say, no, you don't. Mm-hmm. You don't. And you want to let your kids like live and succeed and fail without feeling like mom has to know everything. The other thing I have intentionally done, like my kid, we have been like, please no social media until you're an adult. I mean, I don't want them like accidentally putting a bunch of stuff out in the world that they really wish they hadn't when their brains are not fully cooked. But and you know, even then your frontal lobe isn't fully developed, I think, until you're like late 20s. You know, so
I got married at 20, so I can't even tell you how that works.
And so, like, our oldest set up for an Instagram account after he turned 18, and he like friended me. But you know what? I didn't friend him back because I did not want him worrying about me monitoring what he's posting, what he's liking, mm-hmm. who he's following, and I didn't want to worry about that. I want him to be himself. So will this be forever? I don't know. Does it mean I don't want to be friends with my son? No, but I want him to have a little freedom mm-hmm. to live his life and have me not be in a constant state of like wondering, mm-hmm. why did he post that? Why is he friends with that? Like, I just, mm-hmm. our parents did not have access to that, and they were fine. And I think I will be too if I leave a little distance there. For like, let you breathe a little.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word.
We had those open conversations about expectations about communication. And we also had, from the time they were at home, especially when they started high school, like social media was kind of new then. They had Facebook, but I made an agreement with them that I would not post photos of them or tag them without asking their permission. And that would be the same when they were in college. And even now, you know, it's like I ask, can I post this picture of your child, you know, my grandchildren? And that fosters that trust so that they know I'm not going to embarrass them. And so I think that was preparation for college of knowing I was still going to continue that, asking them, is this, you know, is this okay if I post this public thing about you? The communication things, we just had those conversations of like, what, how often would you like me to reach out to you? We have the family chat, and as they got engaged, we added the girls in. And so now we have this family chat with six of us, and it's hilarious because there are things they share with us on there they would not ever put out publicly. We get regular conversations, but I do remember a time in college where my son followed the rule the college says when you go away, like, don't go home for, I don't know, they tell you like the first semester or something, or maybe it's a couple months. Don't call home for at least the first week or whatever. And he took that literally. Like, we were like, is he still alive? Because, you know, there's like a story on the news about somebody who had fallen in the river, but they didn't know which student was a male student on campus. And like, my husband is texting him going, are you in the river? Because you're not answering. And like, when he got his first teaching job, he moved up north to a wilderness where there was nothing. And he would take his kayak out and go on these canals between cranberry marshes and stuff. And, you know, we didn't talk to him every week even. So I guess we were just relieved when he got a girlfriend because we knew he'd talk to her all the time.
Yeah.
We're like, she's the one who's going to let us know if we need to know anything.
Yeah.
But that preparation did start when the communication we established was when they were at home, of that trust of, you can have these conversations with us and we don't want you to feel like you have to hide something from us. Your friends are always welcome here. And I think that that has led into now that they're, the youngest is almost 30. So weird to think. But it has established even the communication we have with them now. The other thing that we really worked on was life skills. Amber, you were going to say something.
Well, so I was just going to actually ask you a question, you and Amy a question. I know this is not my show, but I'm going to ask you a question anyways.
Hey, we're all asking interview each other problems. Questions.
That's right.
It's a conversation.
Interviewer problem. I think for me, as someone who has, you know, at least 4 years before my first one leaves, I have a fear that as my children become adults, that I won't have a, you know, a good, healthy relationship with them. And part of that is from my own past experience and my current experience with my own family. And so, and then also having one of my children particularly who, he just doesn't get uber attached. Like, I mean, do you know what I mean? Like, I could see him going away and talking to us when he needed us, but not really, just not being connected. And not because he doesn't love us, just part of it being personality.
Yeah.
And so, you know, have you faced that at all? Do you have any advice for that? I don't know.
I have an initial response to that. I don't have a lot of experience, so I'm going to leave the advice to Michelle. But I want to just encourage you in regard to your fear of, because you haven't seen it modeled for you, like that attachment, is that your family unit right now and the way you relate to each other is very different than the way you related in your family unit growing up with your parents. And so the odds that your kids grow up, leave the nest, and suddenly it looks exactly like the dysfunction that you were afraid of, that you were trying to get away from with your family, I don't think the odds of that happening are really high, because so far it's hasn't followed that trajectory. So I want to just encourage you with that.
Thanks, Amy.
I also want to encourage you to look at, you know, however it goes in the first years that they leave home does not mean it's always how it's going to be, because we are a close family and spent, you know, like camping trips and all these things together, like recreationally, we were like, we spent all of our free time together when in the summers, whenever we could. Mm-hmm. When they first left home, I think there were some moments where they almost intentionally created tension to, like, you know, assert that they were adults and they could manage their finances and they could do, you know, certain things. And it was almost like I could sense, like, we're pushing you away a little bit and creating some conflict so that we can be an individual. And it would have been easy to be hurt by that and just say, well, that's the, I guess that's how it's going to go now. But now that we're beyond that, I can see, like, that was just a phase, just like the teenage phase that you're starting right now. And I mean, there were even really awesome conversations later of like, thank you so much for raising us this way. Thank you for having this rule. Now that we're parents, we can see it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, and I, of course, we're not like Mayberry or anything here. We don't have like this. It's not like the Cleavers, but it is like this thing where you look for those good moments and you realize, oh, yeah, there's always a conflict with trying to. We're all adults now. What do we do? We don't agree on how we should clean things anymore and how we should load the dishwasher.
Yeah, I think we have different skills and different awareness now of what relationships can look like between a parent and their grown adult child that looks different, and we have different skills than our parents and grandparents had. Mm-hmm. Where I think I'm realizing that this is a relationship I will always have to invest in and work on my own self and who I am and being a healthy person in it. And that does not end when, like, they move out of the house. And I feel like that that sort of growth in relationship a lot of times ended with, like, the boomers and their parents. Like, at that point, they were like, see ya, and whatever we are now is what it's always going to be, and nothing changes, and we don't talk about any hard things. Where I feel like we're willing to lean into some of those things a little bit more, even though it's kind of scary. And so I think that's why I have hope that things aren't going to necessarily be the worst stereotype that we have seen from the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also when in-laws start coming into the picture, it's also, you know, like, that brings a whole another aspect to it. But just being a safe place for both of them has been good, of like, you know, I'm not gonna like, right now, my piece of advice would be, as you're thinking about your family traditions, those change. And if I had been really tightly held to, like, how we're going to do Christmas and how we do Easter and how we do birthdays, it's like, it's perfectly fine if you celebrate your birthday with your spouse and we're not doing the party at home, or it's okay if Christmas is not on that day, or if we don't uphold this tradition. Because sometimes we're establishing those when the kids are all home, and it's harder to let go of those. And especially because I have boys, I prepared myself for that way before, like junior high. I was like, well, we're going to do this tradition until we can't do it anymore. But I have no resentment for the fact that it's all changed in the last 10 years. It doesn't look like it did. And I have friends who have struggled with that because they have not been okay with those changes. So I would encourage you to be, as you're doing your establishing things now, know that it actually becomes more fun when you bring more people in and you have new traditions. So that communication is, like, the key, even with, now that I have daughters-in-law as well. I know we have to wrap it up because it's going to, I mean, we can keep talking for a little bit here, but we're not I'm not an hour and a half podcast, so we won't go forever. But I encourage you to have a support system, and it might just be, you know, people you reach out to. I joined a Facebook group for empty nesters just because I get to see all of their perspectives. And that one is one that's run by Jill Savage. You know, if you're familiar with her, she's a writer and a podcaster, and there's this whole spectrum of people's experiences there. And so that's been good to see that, okay, sometimes I guess it's normal for me to not be as upset about the kids leaving home as some. You know, the beautiful thing is, as they grew as teenagers and stuff too, I saw this pattern begin to emerge of who they called when they were having a crisis. And when the engine blew up on the Jeep on the way to prom, Dad got the call. And when there was like this, I'm not feeling well and I don't know what to do moment, that I got the call. And so even in college, even now when their kids are sick, I get those calls. Mom, what would you do? And Dad gets the, you know, the sewers backed up into the living room calls. Wow. But it is really cool to see that they still need us. Like, they have not stopped needing us. It's just different, you know? So as you think ahead, I'd love to know, are there any questions, concerns, things that you would just love to hear from other people, our listeners, you know, weighing in as I post this, you know, like, what kind of discussion would you want to continue outside of this podcast with people who are walking through the emptiness process?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great. It would be great to hear even from more people who on the question, you know, that I was asking you, or maybe the fears that people had that they've seen play out differently than maybe what their fears were. I think that's encouraging. Maybe some creative ways to invite spouses into the fold and to respect boundaries of the fact that another human being also is coming in with their, you know, I mean, with all of the traditions they grew up with. And and sometimes you might not be matched with that person because they do hold tightly and expect to be with their family all the time. And so maybe healthy conversations for me around topics like that, because that is definitely something I think about. Like, oh my gosh, are my boys never going to come home on holidays because their wives are crazy traditionalists and don't want anything to do with that?
I want to ask, and I have asked this of some people who have kids that are out of the nest. How do you, when do you stop worrying? And if you don't, how do you function? How do you function with this? And it's something we start learning when our kids are infants, that we have absolutely, we actually don't have any control over what they do. We think we do, but when you first try to get a kid to nap or use the bathroom, that's when you start learning, oh, I can set all the things up for them to do it, but in the end, they have to do it themselves. And so I want to have that, like, how are you surviving? Know that they're doing their own thing. Are you able to thrive and have a life where you're able to enjoy your own life without sitting and worrying about your kids? And somebody that I've heard speaking to this a little bit is Mary DeMuth. And, you know, she recently wrote the book, is it Love, Pray, Listen? Listen, Pray, Love, whatever. It's got all those words in it. But I would say even those three words, those really encapsulate a lot of what it means to be a parent in the emptiness stage. Like, this is my job, and how can I, someone tell me how to stay in those lanes of listening and praying and loving and trusting that God is, it's going to be okay. It's out of my hands.
I am going to put some of these questions out on social media. I know from my own experience that some of those things don't go away. And I've had to be okay with the fact that I don't ever stop. Like, my husband loses sleep now over our four grandkids. Like, worrying about their safety. So now we had two children and now we have four grandchildren. And so it's like, I've actually had to come to terms with how I handle worry in general, because it doesn't go away. And
so we have to figure out a way to function.
And to just in the moment, you know, like, our son's workshop burned down 3 weeks ago, and my husband woke me up at 6:15 in the morning and said, there's a fire over at Austin's house and I got to get over there. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know? And so even going through that painful process of watching them have lost financially so much, you're in a whole nother phase. Like, you wish, just like when they were little, I wish I could just make it all go away and it would be fine again. It doesn't change. Okay, now we're all crying.
It's awful.
Tissue.
Yeah.
So So, Amy, I'm sorry if that's not very hopeful, but
well, I think any other answer I would be suspicious of, because the more parenting I've done, the more I've realized, like, oh yeah, if I don't learn how to handle my anxiety, I'm going to miss out on my entire life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being worried about what's happening or what might happen. And so if I'm going to function as a healthy person, I got to figure out a way to have that exists and also my own self exist at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't be the person with the platitudes going, oh, everything's going to be fine. You know, like that's just, that's annoying. But yet I also have to be the, I'm here for you. Your feelings are valid. I don't have all the answers for you. I think there's more questions that I have as having kids that are grown up than I have answers. And I've become more okay with the questions. Yeah. I don't, it's been a process.
Well, you, and you've lived through some things going badly and you've come out on the other end and you're okay. Yeah. Even though things didn't go a direction you wanted to, like you survived it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that kind of builds that muscle of like, okay, if something bad, it might be really, really hard. And the bad thing you're worried about might happen, but also you're going to be okay. And also it could be great. Something good could happen too.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is right now, Amber's still in the phase where, you know, she can, there's consequences she can set if her kids don't do things the way, but then I can't do that anymore.
You know what's so crazy about that? And I know we have to go, but I mean, even just the other day, I was looking at one of my kids saying, it's so hard for you to understand that the reason why I'm telling you this right now is because I actually don't want to give you a consequence. Like, I don't want to take something away from you. I don't want you to have to stay home, whatever that is. And I know you don't believe that, but that is, I'm trying so hard to get you to understand that this is going to happen, you know, if you don't do this, because I hate it. I hate giving them a consequence. Mm-hmm. Awful. Anyway, that had nothing to do with the empty nesting.
It's hard.
Well, it does, because you can save them from that now, but there's going to come a day where they're just going to have to deal with the natural consequences of life, and all you can do is be there for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't fix it.
Wow.
I want to thank you for being here today. I want to end on a positive note because I just kind of went down this road here. But for the listener who's here with us, it's important for you to acknowledge your feelings. You're going to have a mix of emotions. You're going to have days of sadness and days where you're so proud of your kids. I mean, I am so proud of who they are as adults. It's exciting to watch them do that. And it's exciting to watch them make decisions of preparing to leave home and loading up the trailer and all of those things, because you see who they are as a person. So I encourage you moms who are listening, acknowledge and accept your feelings, because those are so valid. And one of the things that I encourage you to do is have those conversations with your spouse where you encourage each other and point out the things that are not only the things you're celebrating, but the things that each of you do well as a parent, because it is really encouraging for me to say to my husband, I love seeing you interact with our adult children. I love seeing you still as a dad now. You're not wrestling on the floor. You're doing something different. Mm. And I love it when he says to me, you're a good mom. I feel like that has helped us really survive some of the empty nest of encouraging each other and becoming each other's best friends. Mm. And so if you're a listener here who's like, what is your next step? My first step right now would be for you to really invest in that relationship with your spouse in the middle of this really difficult time, so that you're prepared for when it's the two of you staring at each other over the breakfast table and you're like, there's nothing on your calendar. There's no football games anymore and there's no concerts. And you're like, what do we want to do now that we're finally grown up?
Thank you, Michelle.
So thank you. Thank you for sharing your heart today. I really appreciate both of you being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thanks, Michelle.
I so much appreciated that honest conversation, and I hope you did too. And I want you to know as we wrap up here that we're fully aware that not everyone's in the situation. So we were talking about what it's like to become an empty nester as married women with husbands who live in our home. And I know that there are listeners who have not been married and have children, and listeners who have gone through a divorce, or they have lost their spouse and they are widowed. And so I just want you to know that when we approach this, we know that there's not a one size fits all. And your first step might be very different from our first step as we're thinking about preparing for an empty nest. So I encourage you to surround yourself with people who love and support you as you walk through this. When I was a young mom, I was a really young mom. So I had my first child at age 23. And so when I started going through that empty nest phase, many of my friends who were my age had much younger children. So I didn't have as many of the voices who were my peers to surround myself with, but I did gain wisdom from listening to other people. And so if you are feeling all alone right now, reach out to me, reach out to us through the discussion with this episode, but also keep in mind that surrounding you are people who have walked this journey before. So reach out to them as well. I know many moms who are willing to provide support, especially just a listening ear, if someone just says, hey, I'm really struggling. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation about being an empty nester or thinking about becoming one. We are getting very close to where I'm going to take a little bit of a break and focus on writing instead of podcasting, but you're going to be able to connect with me on Substack and continue to get content all the time. So if you haven't been there, listen up at the end of the episode. I'll tell you how you can find me on Substack. Thanks for being here today, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to Life Repurposed. Would you like more? Check out the Life Repurposed magazine on Substack and get resources, weekly musings, and conversations with others. Just go to liferepurposed.me.